Good evening. Thank you very much. Michael Clare, that's fantastic. He's brilliant. Go and see Michael Clare. He's fantastic.
Thank you for supporting my advertising.
Yeah, my pleasure. Will something appear on here? Fantastic. Well, thank you all for coming. And it's fantastic to see so many young people out here tonight as well. That's really, really fantastic. And everybody else, of course. Yes. God, you can't win, can you? I'm going to talk about transition and give a sense of what the idea is all about and where it comes from and a sense of what people are doing. Because I think a lot of what my role is really just telling the stories of what people are doing. I think transition is an experiment. It's a huge self-organizing experiment. And so I want to sort of share some of those learnings with you, I suppose. So I'm going to start with this. This is a sort of a me doodling on top of a proper graph. And really, it's to make the point that we are currently sitting on the top of a really important transition in history. So we are coming to the end of the age of cheap energy and all that has made possible. And you will be reading a lot of stuff in the media now of people saying, oh, there's a new age of oil out there, oil and gas. There's all this tar sands and shale oil and shale gas, and there's masses left, and you know, we have a new golden age of oil. The point I want to make is that the two halves of the oil age, in England we have an expression about a football match that it's a game of two halves, and the oil age is a game of two halves in the same way. The first half has been about cheap, easy to access oil. But the second half is completely different. The second half, there is still lots and lots of fossil fuels, but it's much, much harder to find. It's much in much more remote locations. It requires a lot more energy to extract it. The carbon implications are appalling. And Bill McKibben, who some of you may know from his work campaigning on climate change in the US, and Dr. James Hansen from NASA, say that if that's the total fossil fuel reserves that we know remain, we can only burn one-fifth of what we know remains in order to avoid 2 degrees of climate change. So what we decide to do now as we stand on top of this energy mountain is momentously important. And so what I want to really offer you in transition is one approach to where we go from here. This is the only thing that is vaguely like a graph that I will be showing you tonight. This is out of a really important report produced by a FTSE 250 company in the UK recently, where they say actually peak oil, sometimes people imagine it means we're about to run out of oil. Actually, what it means is it's the moment when the amount of energy you put in to get energy back out again starts to become really difficult. In the 1930s in Saudi Arabia, you put one unit of energy in, you got 100 units of energy out, an extraordinary energy return for a civilization. By the 1990s, that had fallen to about 40 to 1. Now oil production is down around 17 to 1. But many of the things that we are being told are our energy future in the fossil fuel world are down here. The tar sands, shale gas are down at sort of 2, 3, 4 to 1. And what he argues in this report is that actually it's not the moment when you run out of oil that matters. It's the moment when you have to put so much energy back into getting back energy back out again that it just doesn't work. If you're a fox and you eat rabbits and you spend all day running around trying to catch rabbits and you don't catch any, you won't be a fox for very long. You put more energy in than you get out again. This is really, really important. So these new oils, these new energy sources that are being touted are not appropriate to sustain a kind of consumer energy-hungry society in the way that we have it. So in transition, we say there is no cavalry coming riding to our rescue. When you look at these issues of the end of the age of cheap energy, the end of really thinking that we can operate without climate change being an issue, and also the end of the age of cheap debt, cheap credit, that kind of thing, actually when we look at in the communities where we live, who's coming riding to the rescue? It's us. We are that cavalry. And transition is really a response that says it falls to us in the places that we live to make this happen. course, we also need national government. We need local government. We need business. We need international things like we should have had in Copenhagen and Doha. But the piece in the middle, you know, there are all these books, 365 things you can do to save the planet, the things you can do on your own, and then the things government can do. Transition is about that bit in the middle. What if I get together with the people on my street, people on my neighborhood? What can we do? What's the power that lies in there that can drive that forward? So two ideas that are central to transition. Firstly, this idea of localization, of shortening the distances over which we do things. I said yesterday in the talk I gave in Bonn that every year the UK exports 1.5 million kilos of potatoes to Germany and at the same time imports 150 million kilos of potatoes from Germany, which is just ridiculous. And the guy said, well, we have better potatoes. I don't know, we can debate that one into the night, I suspect. You know, but actually, a huge amount of stuff travels around the world just to make GDP look better, really. And actually, so the idea of whether we can look at import substitution, as you reach the end of the age of cheap energy, globalization as we've known it becomes increasingly difficult. And of course, there are issues around how we build resilience in the developed world alongside how we're building resilience in the developing world. But this principle of localization is really important. And the idea of resilience, about how do we design into the places where we live, into our economies, the ability to withstand shock from the outside is a really, really important idea, I think. So in transition, we'll talk about the economies of the places where we live as being like a bucket. And into that bucket comes money from government and grants and wages and pensions. And at the moment, most of it pours out through the holes, through supermarkets, through internet shopping, through paying our energy bills. That money is gone, and its ability to stay and make things happen is lost and has disappeared. We would argue every one of those holes in that bucket is a potential local business, a potential local livelihood. And that actually, if we're looking around, scrabbling around now for the big new economic idea for the next 20, 40, 50 years, I would argue that this is it. This idea that we do things differently in that sense. So transition is an experiment, as I said. It started in Ireland, took off in Devon, is now in thousands of initiatives. We know of at least 2,500, but there are many more that we know of who haven't told us what they're doing. It's a self-organizing model. People pick it up wherever they are and they make it happen. And this is happening now in 40 countries. And the whole thing is like a virus. It goes off and it runs and it spreads and it always surprises you. We got a phone call the other day from people starting Transition Ulaanbaatar. I had to sit down for a little while after that. You know, it's really exciting. And what transition has emerged as is like we talk about it like this. It's like a larder. It's like a pantry in your house. There are different ingredients that we see that people have done. And then in every place, you select those ingredients and you assemble them in different ways. There is no right way to do it. And what I want to share with you is some of those ingredients and tell you about them using some stories about what people are doing and the different stages. So there's maybe 5 stages to how this process goes. The first one, rather unimaginatively, we call starting out. So it starts with a group of people who come together. Some of you maybe, how many people here are part of a transition group where you live? Okay.
Okay, good.
No. Maybe a few more by the end of this evening, we hope. That'll be good. So it starts with some people who come together who are excited about the idea. And one of the things that's really important, I think, is that the groups have the right tools to know that group is going to last. You know, you don't want to get 6 months into running the group and then you take each other to court for slander or something. So actually giving people the tools for how those groups work is really important. And that's one of the things in the trainings and so on that we do that gives them a real chance of success. Then they do a lot of awareness raising, try and talk about these ideas around peak oil, climate change, resilience, tell the stories of what's happening in other places, this kind of thing. A lot of that work goes on. These are Bertie and Gertie, who are from Transition Town Tooting in London. And the bigger when they came to us and said, how do we do transition in Tooting? I said, I have absolutely no idea. But when you know, do come and tell us. So they went and they designed an enormous street carnival with 1,000 kids from local schools and mosques and temples who made incredible puppets and 6-meter-high animated figures, and everything was made out of recycled materials. They used 1 million old plastic bags and old crisp packets. With a week to go, the local council said, you can't do it. you can't march down the main road. It's not allowed. If you're going to do it, you have to pay the policing. It'll cost you £50,000. They said, well, we haven't got £50,000. So they went to see the local police, and the head of the local police said, we'll pay for the policing because this is the best bit of community development we've seen happen here for years. And in the end, it went ahead. 1,000 people, 10,000 people came out to see it. At the end, local restaurants fed everybody for free in the local park. And Bertie and Gertie are models of the real Bertie and Gertie who swim on the local swimming baths every day. Personal resilience is really important. This idea that actually, I'm sure there are many people here who've spent a long time working in environmental activism, and all too often the model, and I speak from my own experience, all too often the model of environmental activism is a sort of like carrying a boulder up a hill, you know, and you're kind of keeping going, and I must keep going for the sake of the planet, you know, and not sort of really honouring the fact that it's really hard work, and lots of people suffer from burnout and suffer from exhaustion, and so designing into this process a way that people can be supported and can help each other is really important from the start. And having a vision, a story about where this is, where we're going to go. What could it look like? What would Berlin look like in 2030 if we get this right? How would it be? You know, if we can't tell that story, if we can't see it and smell it and hear it, then how are we going to really make that happen? This is in Toronto. Transition Toronto did a big theatre piece, a kind of interactive theatre piece about trying to dream that alive, bring that to life with actors and props and people in a very creative kind of a way. So that's the first stage where you come together and you think, well, let's do this. And so by now, maybe you might be called Transition. Wherever you are, you have a group, you feel like you're working well. So then the second stage is about how do you take that a bit deeper? Oh, and that picture's disappeared. Oh, sorry, oh no, hang on, that's very strange. Okay, here we are. So this is in Bielefeld. This is the permaculture garden that the Transition Town Bielefeld have set up. And this is about volunteers. So at the beginning, doing transition, there's not really any money in it. It's driven by volunteers. Nobody really tends to get paid. So this has been a fantastic project for all kinds of very, very diverse people coming together to put their time and energy into making something happen, something physical happen. And how you support volunteers in doing that kind of project is really important. If you want to know any more about it, Gert can tell you about it later. Sometimes there's a different model that happens because actually this takes a lot of work and a lot of us are very, very busy. This is in Sarasota in the States, and Transition Sarasota, the guy second from that side on the bottom row, the guy with the checked shirt, he designed Transition Sarasota in such a way that it would actually employ him to run it. And so the idea is starting to think about a transition initiative as an enterprise, which is able to create livelihoods for people from the beginning, is a really interesting part of this experiment, you know, looking at seeing how that works. And around this time, groups start to do things as well. It's not a kind of an academic think tank. It's about people getting on with it and doing stuff. This is in Seattle in the US, and Transition Seattle started a tool library where they've had over 1,200 tools donated by local people, from chisels to big sort of saws and all kinds of equipment, and you pay $40 a year to become a member, and then you can rent out any tools like you would from a library. And this is the local newspaper, have a guy who draws sketches for them, who came out and did some drawings of what they're doing. And this is in Portugal, in Porto Alegre, in Portugal, which, like much of Portugal, has been really affected by the economic crisis over the last couple of years. And just off the shot here, about where we are, there's a big apartment block. And the woman who I spoke to who lives in this apartment block, she said, over the last 15 years, I've watched the people who live in this block turn their backs on each other slowly. The social cohesion has kind of started has really faded away. And then on the other side of there, out the other side of the picture, is a shopping mall, a shopping center. And this was just grass. And then one of the people in Porto Alegre Transición, however you say that, Transição, suggested the idea of creating a garden on here. Clearly, this is not going to feed Porto Alegre, but actually what happened was everybody who lived in the apartment block came out and got involved in this garden. This garden acted as a catalyst for all kinds of other things. Sometimes it doesn't take much. It takes a small focal thing to stimulate that kind of sense of possibility of what we could create from here. This garden grew all kinds of different things, and it's become a real kind of catalyst for transition in the town. And local food is often where people get started. You don't need to wait for permission from anyone to start doing local food. This is in Tooting again, and when we talk about local food, in some rural towns, you can kind of imagine what local food means, local seasonal food. If you go to Tooting, which is a very, very diverse part of London, most of the food shops on the high street, all the food is imported from the Indian subcontinent, every single thing in the shop. What does local food mean in that context? So they run a festival every year called the Foodival, where people bring things that they've grown on their allotments, in their back gardens, in community gardens around Tooting, and they bring them down to the high street in Tooting, and then the cooks from each tradition, the Turkish cooks, the Lebanese cooks, the Indian, Pakistani, whatever, cook that food in that tradition and give it away on the high street, accompanied by various other events too. So by this stage, you're up and running, you've got projects going. People are starting to look and say, yeah, this transition group are doing something. There's a buzz that's starting to be created. So how do you then start to really connect that more widely out into the community and what's going on there? This is one of the groups in London again. The idea of using open space, these kind of tools for bringing people together to have big community brainstorms about where we go from here. What can the future be like? And if you're a control freak, organising these events is absolutely terrifying. Because they are about self-organisation, and you think it's not going to work, and they always work. It's really an extraordinary thing to be around. And it's around this time that often transition groups start to talk to their local council. Because if you go very early and you haven't done anything, then the response might leave you feeling a bit deflated. But actually, if you go later on when you have things behind you, it can make a big difference. This is in Italy, in a place called Montevello, which is near Bologna. And the transition group started up there, and it was going very well. And then the local elections were coming up. So two of the people from the local transition group ran for the local government, and they both got elected. So now the guy with the sash, he is the local mayor. And the guy two along from him with the little beard, he's the environment minister. And they produced the most extraordinary statement, resolution, when they got in, which talked about resilience and sustainability, and it even talked about promoting a culture of frugality and simplicity. I haven't yet to see any other local authority that talks about those virtues. So the fourth stage, I think, is where transition really becomes something really, really exciting, which is we call building, which is where we look at the need for a new local economy and where the new economy is going to come from, and we say, well, we need to do it. We need to be the catalyst for that. We need to start this. This is one of the projects that we've done in Totnes, which is called Transition Streets, and I understand there are moves afoot to try and develop a German version of Transition Streets. This won a very prestigious award in the UK a couple of years ago. The idea is if you want to help people to reduce their energy consumption and so on, maybe the best way to do it is just by getting people together on their streets, rather than the government sending people leaflets and that kind of thing. So the idea is we've produced a very simple workbook, and people get groups of between 6 and 10 of their neighbours together. They meet in each other's houses. First week, they maybe look at energy and learn how the energy works in their house and how much energy they use. Second week, they look at water. Third week, they look at food and so on. And on average, by the end of the whole thing, they've reduced their carbon footprint by about 1.2, 1.3 tonnes, save themselves maybe €800 or something. And 700 households now in our town have done this, of which more than half were low-income households. But the really exciting thing about it for me is when I meet people in the street who've done this, they don't say, do you know what, Rob? I've just saved 1.2 tons of carbon. It's fantastic. I feel fabulous. What they say is this. I know my neighbours. This is from when we asked most of them at the end, what did you get out of it? This is what they said. Getting to know my neighbours, community, feeling part of the place where I live. And it's really interesting that you tackle climate change through a different way, by bringing people closer together and by building community. And what's happened, a lot of these groups enjoyed meeting with each other so much that when they'd finished the programme, they just carried on meeting anyway. And some of them have set up a community cinema. Some of them set up an orchard. You know, these kind of things move out from this. And how do we start to create a new economy that actually starts to create work for people? Not just a sort of a gift economy, kind of virtual thing, but how do we make tangible, viable enterprises that are creating work? This is in a place called Slathwaite in Yorkshire. Their local greengrocer shut down, so the community raised £20,000 and took over the shop as a community cooperative. But because it's done using transition thinking, it's been a catalyst for so much more than that. There's now a cooperative set up growing the food to sell in the shop. There's a wind energy cooperative set up for the valley. And one of the things that found a home there was this local bakery called the Handmade Bakery. They make the most fantastic bread. They needed to raise money to expand their business. They needed £40,000. The bank wanted to charge them 7% interest. But they had members, they're a community-supported bakery, so they went to their members, said, please lend us £40,000, we'll pay you 7% interest, but we'll pay you the interest in bread, which cost them 2%. So it's a really great way for a young family to start a business and for that business to become viable. And this is in a place called Topsham, and they've been doing transition for about a year, and they said, what is it do we think in this town that really brings people together, really unites people? Is it peak oil? Is it climate change? Is it beer? Yeah, it could be beer, actually. So they started their own brewery, and they raised about £40,000. These are all the people with their shares. And they started brewing. And I'm in the process at the moment in the town where I live of starting a community brewery as well. And we're really intrigued about the idea of how a community brewery could become a catalyst for a new economy. Could you have a brewery where every few months you bring out a new bottled beer and you have somebody who's trying to start an enterprise in the town and a percentage of the sales go to starting that business and you tell that person's story on the label. So every time people make that choice to support a local brewery, you know, people talk a lot about impact investing. I think the kind of impact investing that we need is that kind of internal investment where you can see the impact of that investment on a daily basis as you walk around. Community energy, I was saying last night, I feel a bit of a fraud coming to Germany to talk about community energy, because in England we say, well, in Germany, they have 50-something percent of all renewables are community-owned, whereas in England it's 3% or something absolutely mortifying. But I want to just tell you a couple of the stories of how transition groups are doing that. This is in Lewes in Sussex, and the local transition group here set up the first community-owned solar power station in the UK. They raised £350,000 from local people, and this is a brewery. This is the last beer-related story, I promise. They covered the roof of this brewery in 544 solar panels with money from the community, and the brewery brewed a special beer called Sunshine Ale to celebrate. And I love the idea that you have a brewery that documents the story of the wider community's transition in the names of the beers that it brings out. That's just me, I think. This is in Japan, and after the tsunami and the nuclear crisis in Japan, this is in a place called Fujino, which was the first transition initiative in Japan. And they set up their own energy company called the Fujino Electric Company. They had acquired a lot of renewable energy infrastructure, but after the tsunami, a lot of the communities that were really affected by it were unable to run the festivals that they ran throughout the year, the festivals of light, which were really, really important to them. So the people in Fujino loaded all of their kit up and went to these areas, enabled them to run those festivals. And then when they came back, they were so moved by the experience that actually they set up the Fujino Electric Company. The great thing about it is that idea of creating your own electric company, since they got started in Fujino, has led to 40 other places across Japan setting up their own community-owned energy companies. This is in the city of Bath in the southwest of England, and I think what they're doing here is fantastic. Bath and West Community Energy, what they've done is create a model which is really important. The idea of... I went to a conference in Manchester the other week that was about place branding. So at the moment, all the cities around the world all try to brand themselves as different things. We're the city of enterprise. No, well, we're the city of cheese or whatever. We're the city of something or other, enterprise, you know, thing. So actually, what they've tried to do there is, so the problem with that is it's all about attracting inward investment. How do we get inward investment? I think the big question alongside that is how do we create internal investment? And I'll come back to that in a minute. But what they've done in Bath is fantastic. Bath and West Community Energy was able to offer, through the model they created, people who invested in them was able to offer them a return from day one, which meant that people could move their pensions into a community-owned energy company, which meant that their first share option raised £750,000, from local people. And a lot of that was people moving their pensions. If we can start to take our pensions out of the industries that are investing in fossil fuels, that are investing in the destruction and all the harmful practices that we really don't want to support, and into driving local renewables, local food, local economies, that's something really, really powerful. And so we start to see that happening in places like this. And this is Brixton. So some you might say, well, Bath is a relatively wealthy kind of a city. And surely, you know, people who are able to invest in community renewables, it's going to be the middle class and the wealthier people. This is in Brixton in London. And here they started Brixton Energy as a community-owned energy company. It came out of Transition Brixton. And their first project they did was called Brixton Solar One. And they needed to raise £100,000 to put a solar system, solar PV on the roof of this tower block. This is some of the poorest housing in London. For Brixton Solar One, maybe 25% of the investment came from local people. The rest came from more kind of middle class people in Brixton, thought it was a good idea that they wanted to support. It was such a success that when they did Brixton Energy 2, about 6 months later, about 70% of the investment came from the people who lived in the buildings underneath. And they trained up local young men in how to become solar installers. The third one, which they're going to be launching later this year, they're hoping it'll be 100% people who live in the building who are going to be investing. People, the minimum share is £250. People for whom £250 is a lot of money, but the return is better than leaving it in the bank. So it's really starting to build a real kind of momentum around renewables in those communities. Another aspect of this is about, again, going back to our leaky bucket, how do we make money cycle locally so that it can't leave? Make money go round as many times as possible before it goes. This is in Brixton again. This is the Brixton Pound. They have David Bowie on their £10 note, which is so much nicer than looking at the Queen every day, I have to say. The idea of this is it's money that, they call it money that sticks to Brixton. So you spend it in local independent businesses. What they developed there, along with Transition Network and New Economics Foundation and a Dutch organization called Coin, is a system where you pay by text. You walk into the shop and you do your shopping by just sending a text to the shopkeeper. It's a really, really fantastic system. And then what happened more recently was that the Bristol Pound launched. So the Brixton Pound, Brixton is a small area of London, maybe 90,000 people. The Bristol Pound is a city of 800,000 people. And this man on the far side there is George Ferguson, who is the new mayor of Bristol. They're the first city to elect a new mayor for a long time. And he won. And on his inauguration speech, he announced that he would be taking his full salary, £51,000, entirely in Bristol Pounds. And then when the Queen visited Bristol the following week, the gift that he presented her with on behalf of the people of Bristol was a presentation pack of Bristol Pounds. And history does not relate quite what she thought of it, not having her head on it, I don't know. But I have this idea that somewhere in the Tower of London there is a special dungeon reserved for people who print their own money. But he's still there anyway. But what's exciting in Bristol is that the city council are really behind it. You can pay your tax in Bristol Pounds. You can pay your business rates in Bristol Pounds. The Bristol Pounds pay their staff, give the option of paying them part of their salary in Bristol Pounds. This is a scale where if this works, it's really interesting. And we get more and more places ringing us every week to ask how you might do this. And thinking strategically is really important. So by this stage, your transition group is starting to develop lots of enterprises. They're starting up and they're getting going. How do you look at them in a strategic context? So this is a community-supported agriculture farm in Norwich, which came out of a whole study they did called Can Norwich Feed Itself, where they looked at the city, the land around it, and what it needed to support itself. And this is a picture of a donut, which, why did I put, yes, because what can happen at this stage, in terms of interesting challenges that transition faces, is that sometimes what can happen is that then all the energy goes into projects. And how do you hold that bit in the middle? That bit in the middle that is continuing the awareness raising, that is continuing to offer the support, that is continuing to say transition matters, that continues to draw these things together. And that kind of donut effect is something that we start to see. And we're really looking at how we address that and how you hold the middle in transition. This is something, how are we doing for time? Are we okay?
I'm fine.
Okay. Don't want to overstay my welcome.
I tell you.
Okay. This is a project that we will be publishing soon that we've been working on in Transition Town Totnes. And I think this is a really, really exciting model. This is called the Totnes and District Local Economic Blueprint. So very often, if Walmart want to open a supermarket in my town, they can say, we will create 25 jobs. We will bring £1 million every year to this community. Those of us who argue that local economies are really important and we need to protect and enhance local economies and that that's where the future of the economy will come from, we don't have those figures. We can't make that case. We tend to say we should do it because it's really good. We should do it because it's kind of more sustainable. We don't have that kind of economic case. What this does, for the first time as far as I'm aware, is it maps the local economy in real detail in terms of food, energy, building retrofits, and how we care for the elderly. Where does all the money go? So we now know, for example, that every year we spend £30 million on food and drink, of which 20 goes out through just two supermarkets. And we have a much bigger local food economy than most other places. That's £20 million leaving our economy every year that could, in part at least, be staying locally and stimulating new enterprises. We know that money spent with local businesses creates more jobs, cycles more often locally, has more benefits to the local economy. So we can now say, if we could manage a shift in this community of 10% to local food, that's £2 million in our local economy that wasn't there before. That's the cavalry coming to the rescue. It means that we shift from talking about localization as being an idea and community resilience as being an idea to community resilience being economic development. There's a real kind of tangible benefit to this in terms of creating work and so on. This will be publishing this in about 2 weeks. But the exciting thing about this is that this isn't something that was just produced by Transition Town Totnes. This was produced by the District Council, the Town Council, the Chamber of Commerce, the local college, the local school, a whole network of local organisations who've come together around this agenda. It's very, very exciting. And another thing that we need to be looking at is about bringing assets into community ownership. All too often, development is something that happens to us. Regeneration is used as this word that's like motherhood and apple pie, that regeneration is always a good thing. But actually, all too often we see in towns and cities, regeneration is something that actively undermines local resilience. It sweeps independent traders aside and brings in all the usual chains to dominate the economic life of that place. And the same thing happens with housing, new development. This is a project that I'm involved in, as you can see, which is where we are working to bring an old 8-acre derelict industrial site in the middle of our town into community ownership. We've many, many hundreds of people come out to support this, and it's about what does that look like if we own the assets and develop the assets so the community decides what happens there and benefits from it. How can development become a catalyst for community resilience, for economic resilience? And that's what we really hope to develop on that site. Yep, perfect, perfect. So the last stage we call daring to dream, which is actually, well, where could this all go? What would this look like if every town and city had its own currency, its own energy company, its own food systems, it's all that kind of thing? What would that actually look like? One of the things that I find really fascinating about transition is how it spreads. So it's not a top-down model. It's not a Coca-Cola franchise. You know, this is something which is owned and driven by people. And this is a mycorrhizal fungus. This is a particular kind of a fungus that you find in undisturbed forests. And it runs incredibly fine, and it holds that forest together. It becomes the neural network that informs that woodland. If I had a cube that big of topsoil rich in mycorrhiza, it would have about 8 miles of mycorrhiza in it. It becomes how the wood communicates with itself. It's what creates the resilience. And it fruits sometimes in places you expect and sometimes places you don't expect. Transition is like you inoculate a place with that culture and it runs. And a lot of it runs underneath the surface. People come to where I live and say, oh, I can't see any transition going on here. Imagine they're going to see big windmills and goats grazing on the roof, that kind of thing. You know, but actually a lot of it runs beneath the surface. So when we talk about the end of the age of cheap energy, the end of this, that and the other, every end is a new beginning. And I think actually, I think that the possibilities at this stage are really, really thrilling of what we can create from this point moving forward. So the way that I like to think about it is like this. So we could think of the last 150 years of the oil age as being like an enormous mountain that we've climbed, using our ingenuity, our brilliance, our scientific skills to climb to the top of this mountain. And now we stand with more energy underneath our feet than any civilization has ever known. We can see extraordinary things. We have insights and views that no one could ever have dreamt of in the past. And now we have to work out how we get down again. And when we look at it like that, it becomes a move away from something. It becomes a walk down the hill in the rain. It becomes a sort of a leaving something that felt like it was the best we could have ever had. What we like to do in transition is to flip that upside down and say, actually, maybe we could look at the oil age as being like a big, deep, dark lagoon that we dived into because we were told that if only we could dive deeply enough, there was great treasures and gold lying at the bottom for us that would really make us happy. Finally, we would be happy. And we've dived deeper and deeper and deeper. And the deeper we've dived, the less we've been able to see each other. It's become darker. We've lost contact with each other. It has become more and more isolating. And now we are down at the bottom, rootling around, looking for the gold. When we look at it like that, actually, then the move away from that isn't a move away from something. It's a move towards something. It's a move towards being able to see each other again, seeing the light again, seeing the fresh air, hearing the birds again. It becomes a move towards something which is much more nourishing, which is about good livelihoods, about good food, about people, about community, about renewable energy, all that kind of thing. It's certainly what gets me out of bed every morning, and I hope that it's something that you might want to put your shoulder to trying to make happen following this evening. If you'd like to know any more about what we do, here's some different things, there's some links, and the website where you can find out about all that's happening in Germany and if there are local initiatives near you that you could get involved with. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you.